Obedient for the adventure is what I'm talking about this morning. Obedient for the adventure. You'll get to where I'm going as we go through it. I was leading an NG leaders meeting just the other week, and I just felt compelled again to remind them, as I'd remind us all, as I'd remind myself, that even though everybody there was a leader in leading their church, that we're called to be followers before we're called to be leaders in any setting. Followers of Jesus. That is the priority of our lives. Are we following him? And it's him first. He's the one. It's his words. It truly is all about him. Let me read you some Bible verses. These are some of the strong verses that are absolutely true. And sometimes we have to wrestle with our own hearts as we read them, but they're actually quite liberating as we lean into them. We know that we have come to know him, speaking of Jesus, if we keep his commands. Whoever says, I know him, but does not do what he commands is a liar, and the truth is not in that person. But if anyone obeys his word, love for God is truly made complete in them. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must live as Jesus lived. Gosh. Matthew 5:8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And then Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commands. And so whenever we read verses about obedience, I'm guessing there's the main thing, knowing our humanity, is that we tend to think that when Jesus is commanding us to live for him, to follow him, we might jump to a conclusion, oh, that's about sin eradication. You know, I mustn't misbehave. And there's an absolute validity to that, and I'll come back to that as well. But I guess my encouragement to this morning is that if he is leading us, if he is commanding us that we follow him, it's for the adventure of life, not just sin eradication. He's not just wanting to exclude stuff from our lives, which there is stuff we need to leave behind, baggage that we don't need. But he's trying to remind us here that you must live as Jesus did. He's saying, I've got a life for you that's full of spiritual adventure and meaning and purpose. But the way we enter into that is by following him. It's irrespective, actually, depending whether we've got an adventurous spirit or not. It's the nature that we are, that our natural nature is irrelevant. Jesus said, I've got a bit of an adventure, a faith adventure in life for you. For me personally, not long after I gave my life to Jesus and became a Christian, I was 19 years old at the time, not long after, I thought I'd end up doing something like this. I felt God speak to me. I believe there was some sort of call on my life. And so even though I was a really brand new Christian, I had a really clear plan that I was going to graduate, which took longer than I thought, another story. I would then work for a couple of years, then I would go and be a missionary somewhere overseas, and then I'd come back here and do church stuff. That was my plan. And I took that pretty seriously. So pretty much the first thing I did when I started work was go and visit a friend of mine who'd been a missionary in Tanzania for a year, and so went to see him in Mwanza. Fairly big city now, but at the time was not big at all. He didn't even know we were coming. We just turned up in his house in the middle of Africa, me and a friend who'd gone to sea in that time, just for me to view. I wonder what it's like being a missionary there. Then about a year later or so, went round the East Asia, went to Malaysia, Hong Kong, China, the Philippines, again asking the question, Lord, is this what you've got for me? And came back from that and thought, no, that really isn't what God has got for me. But I was serious about wanting this adventure with God, you get it? You know what I mean? It meant something to me. And by this time, Sarah and myself got engaged not long after, and it was part of our conversations. We'll go wherever God takes us to. You know, this really mattered to us, being a follower of Jesus, wherever he might take us. Well, he took us from Mapley to Arnold. You know, that's the reality of what he does. The irony is not lost within me as I talk about adventure with God. You know, it's like, well, is that it? I'm totally convinced that was it. And I'll come back to that a little bit more. And I think my conviction is that if we want to be true in our determination to have an undivided heart and to follow him, whether it be from Mapley to Arnold or to the ends of the earth, but is that sense that if I'm going to make an impact where he's got me, then even if I'm not geographically moving, I've got to have something in my spirit perpetually, continually, that says, I am following you, Jesus. Help me not have an undivided heart. And then my personal confession or my view is that it's been an absolute blast serving him and loving him and being here. Wouldn't swap it for anything in the world. Slightly nicer weather, maybe. But this is where the Lord has placed us. But the transformation that we might want to bring as a church, and this is what I'm going to spend my time on this morning, is inextricably linked to the transformation that God wants to do in our hearts. The footprint that we will leave wherever you might live, whichever part of Nottingham you might live, the footprint that you want to leave in your workplaces, amongst your family and your friends, the transformation as a God follower that you want to bring there is actually linked to the transformation that is going on in our hearts. True followers of him, you know, an undivided heart is the place where we begin to have the significance that maybe matters. Here's a couple of news stories this week. This is why I believe we're called here, by the way. Nottingham is the poorest, this is both from this week. Nottingham is the poorest place in the country, according to government data. The Office for National Statistics has ranked the whole of the UK based on gross disposable household income, the amount of money households have after paying tax, receiving benefits, and Nottingham is at the bottom of the list. Somebody's got to shine the light. Don't know what you'd do when you read stories like this next one. 1 in 10 children have watched pornography by the time they are 9 years old, according to disturbing new research by the Children's Commissioner of England. The report found that a quarter of pupils in their final year of primary school have already been exposed. It also showed much of the material being consumed by children and young people features violence. 4 out of 5, 79% of those surveyed, have seen pornography involving violence by the age of 18, while 1 in 3 young people have actively sought out depictions of sexual violence, such as physical aggression, coercion, and degradation. You see, God is looking for people with an undivided heart. He's looking for a people that are saying, I'm a follower of you, Jesus, and I want to be one of your change agents here. You know, it matters here. If you want to just dig into this much more, there's a guy called Pete Hughes. He leads Jed's Church. He's done a series on this in London. Let the Light In. If this sort of stuff really is interesting, you go and listen to that whole series. I want to just pick out some of the thoughts that I found really helpful from that. So society, I believe, is linked to the state of the human heart. If you understand, the stuff that I just read is linked to the state of the human heart. But never before, I don't think, have we limited or separated the two things, the state of society versus the human heart. Pope Gregory, 600 AD, he listed what those of us with a Catholic background will know very well, the 7 deadly sins. And so there's not one Bible verse that put these down, but he's just sort of linked together and said, well, if we look through, these are sins of the heart that go on. So lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, pride. Gosh, we've dived in deep this morning, haven't we? And again, in some traditional teaching, they were unforgivable. Nothing's unforgivable. Nonsense, that is. But like they call that because they express something of the human heart. And we know, I hope we've conveyed to you in our teaching, our preaching, that as we come to Jesus, our hearts can be set free. We come to the cross And then we embark a whole journey for the rest of our lives where the fruit of the Spirit fills us and then forms in us love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness and self-control. That those things, we don't get those and then become a Christian. The only way we receive freedom from the stuff, the seven deadly sins, is to come to Jesus. He's the one who sets us free. He's the one who comes and says, none of those need to dominate in your life anymore. Come to me. And then we're on with a life journey of me filling you and forming that stuff on the other side of the page. It says in Ezekiel, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. Thank God. I will remove from you a heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. Thank God that we haven't got a God that just says, don't do that, do that. He says, no, I'm going to work on your inside. I'm going to help you with this. We're hand in hand, John. You know, you can't do this on your own. In fact, you're hopeless at doing it on your own. So when we're praying like the place Joel led us to a moment ago, I don't know about you, but I'm just saying, Spirit of God, just fill me again. It's you. I can't be what I'm called to be. It's you that I need. I don't know. I've talked to many folks, for example, just to take the wrath one or the anger one from the previous list, who came from a background of maybe even violence or crime and stuff, and then met Jesus. And something immediately dropped off them. They knew a transformation had taken place, but it wasn't complete. The fruit of the Spirit, they needed to continue to be followers of him, inviting him to lead, allowing him to transform so that peace could replace anger over their lifetime. You get it? We come to Jesus. He frees us. And then we have a lifetime of allowing him lead so that transformation comes. And I don't care how long you've been a Christian. 2 minutes or 200 years, this lifelong heart surgery that goes on is part of the journey of life. So not only does that then bless us, and then I might speak to somebody who's from that background, and often they come across as incredibly peaceful people that have been on this journey for a while, and they would say what an absolute joy that's brought to their lives, that they don't have to live in the madness any longer. So not only does it bless them, but the point I'm making this morning is that part of the transformation of our heart has that impact on society as well. An undivided heart matters for you, but also matters for those out there that we want to serve and care for. Let's talk about where society's at for the moment, shall we? Next slide, I think, Julian. You see, impurity, a divided heart, if you like, blessed are the pure of heart, leads to injustice. But purity leads to justice. I'll get back to that in a moment. A number of years ago, I wrote to a number of significant people. Some wrote back, some didn't. One of them was the chief exec of ExxonMobil. So my first job out of university was to work for them. So I wrote to the bloke in Baton Rouge, who was Rex Tillerhouse at the time, going back about 12 years or so. He was the bloke who was running it at the time, and said to him, I've read some really terrible stuff about the way that Exxon is holding back on proposals for climate change. You know, you're blocking legislation that's not actually helping society move forward and deal with climate change. Because something within me was wanting to deal with the injustice at that time and now. And then you read the press this week and all companies with massive, massive profits. Personally, I haven't got a problem with that, but reinvest it in stuff that's green energy and gives the planet a chance, surely. And so society has now got to this place. The next slide, Julian, will help me illustrate it, that we've separated the injustice that we see in society that we're crying out for. So the Me Too movement, which again, all incredibly valid. Extinction Rebellion, Make Poverty History, Anti-Modern Slavery, Black Lives Matter. These, we've got a generation of society rightly calling out for more justice. And right, and as we should. You know, in my work with the King's Village, yes, we want to tackle poverty, but it's the justice issues that we want to get to the heart of as well. This really, really matters. But the society that we live in at the moment has separated the individual purity of heart from the justice issues that it so often wants to tackle. Let me give some illustrations. Of course, human trafficking is terrible, and the sex industry is polluting the mind of our children. But a little bit of pornography doesn't matter. Being cocky or proud is needed to succeed in work or wherever it might be. Really? Let's think of attitudes of heart. I deserve this house. I've worked for it. You don't know how hard I've worked. Well, I've seen a lot of people work hard and not have a house like that. Are you sure you're not just talking about greed? I could never forgive them. You don't know what they've done to me. I could go on. The point I'm wanting to link together to this morning is that our purity of heart, our commitment to follow, the stuff that's going on here is the very thing that will give us the right to speak into the justice issues and make a change in the society out there. Society doesn't get it, but we as the church must get it. If we move on to the next one, Julian. So we bring our hearts to the cross. Forever and always, Lord, come and wash us clean. God, help me with the stuff that's rooted there. God, help me be the person you've called me to be. I've made a mistake again, Lord, and yet I'm desperate to follow you. So we bring our hearts to the cross. And in doing so, it gives us the opportunity to bring the justice issues to the cross as well. Next one again. You see, I believe God is passionately interested in our society out there being a better place. I think it really matters to him. Poverty, issues of race, surely equality is right now, should be right by now. Surely men and women should be paid the same for doing the same job in our workplaces. Surely women that are pregnant shouldn't be sacked. Again, listen to the news this week. So there's a whole host of people trying to work out how to make a difference and bring the justice issues, the structures that are broken, to the right place. I'm saying, as a follower of Jesus, I believe the cross is the place. And as we bring our hearts to the cross, we can be those agents for change, either on a big scale or a small scale. But if we choose not to, then we're part of the problem, not part of the solution. The two are inextricably linked. So not only does it bless you, matter to you, to keep a short account with the Lord, I believe it's one of those things that will make a massive difference out there. Jesus wants to deal with sin wherever he finds it. We as a society at the moment are tending to think about the big structures which matter to Jesus. But he's saying to his church, by the way, I'm looking at your heart. Here's a quote I enjoyed. The place God calls you is where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. You know, so we're talking about your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger. It's in that place that God wants us to operate, to see his kingdom come, for us to be kingdom bringers, to be carriers of his presence, for our lives to really count. Let me put it another way. I often find that when we lose our joy in bringing God's kingdom, or we feel confused about where he's placed us or where he's planted us, or life just seems just a little bit confusing and there can be lots of external circumstances, I think the way to rectify our own heart is to just come back to him and say, examine me, Lord. Examine me. It's fascinating. When you look at ancient civilizations, particularly where society has been built upon and built upon and built upon, that you find that city after city after city after city has been built. And so when the archaeologists get in there, they find one level and think, this is amazing. And then they dig another level and think, this is amazing. And you see confession. How do we bring all this together? And confession is the way that it's brought together. Therefore, confess your sins to each other and pray for each other so that you may be healed. You see, confession is the thing. Acknowledging our heart condition in front of him is the thing that will liberate us into what's next with him. Not talked about as much as maybe it should be. And so it's like an excavation that goes on in our heart. God deals with us at one level. And then we realize a few months, a few years pass on. Okay, God's going to deal with that at another level. Oh gosh, God's got another level to deal with that. Lord, I'm determined to be a follower of you. A mature church, Tyler Statton says this, a mature church is not one that needs to confess less. It's one with greater freedom to confess. It's not a church without sin. It is a church without secrets. I don't know how this works for you. And we're all different, aren't we? If we put the list up again, we don't need to put the list up, but if we're all up again, we'll have more vulnerabilities than others to different things in those lists. And I believe the Lord would want to, at different times, have an honest conversation with each of us. How are you doing with that? We don't have to go like searching deep in our hearts. The Spirit of God makes it really obvious to us. I was setting off for Park Run yesterday. So when I first did Park Run years ago, I remember looking at the start line and thinking, gosh, well, I'll easily beat them. Look at the size of them. Just being honest. Or, look how small they are. They haven't got very long legs. I'll easily beat them. Look at that old bloke there. Well, when they all pass you, you get a like a real good sense of your own ability. You know, that the pride easily gets dealt with in that setting because pretty useless, really. You know, they're pretty useless. And so yesterday, set up at Parker again. I start pretty much at the back these days because that just helps me. And then a lady and a partner is standing next to me as we start. She's at least 7 months pregnant, you know, at least 7 months pregnant, and has got something that like straps on the bump and whatever. And honestly, because I've done Park Run a lot now, nothing within my brain thought I can beat her. I just knew. Do you know what I mean? I just absolutely, I know myself. You get it? I just know it now. I guess she's run before. And so she heads off and then we're sort of two thirds of the way round. And then I see, oh, she's not that far ahead. And then I think again, I think I can beat her. I'm delusional once again. Do you follow me? And of course, as we get near the end, she sprints off and beats me easily. The first layer, because of my previous experience, I'd done all right. Two-thirds of the way round, I've reached another layer, and I've got a false opinion of myself on a deeper level again. Let's talk about pride for a minute, shall we? I've done this for a long time now. I know where I fit, and I know my gift set. Quite relaxed with that. Know my strengths, know my weaknesses. I'm okay. The Lord knows, I know. That's good. Occasionally, I'll surprise myself and see, gosh, there's a bit more pride there than I realised. I thought I'd have more influence in that setting. I thought they'd be a bit more interested in what I've got to say. Gosh, Lord, I thought me and you had dealt with that. But you find another level. And so for me, I recognise it in myself and I go and have a word with him and go for a walk and say, Lord, I'm sorry about this. I thought I thought, because when I got saved, going back to those early days of being saved, me and my mates used to joke, no wonder we're called to be church leaders because the rest of them are so useless. That's what, I just being honest. We'd gone to a number of churches. No wonder God will use us, because this lot, these churches we're going to, they're absolutely hopeless. A few years in of church, oh gosh, this is a bit more difficult than I thought. I'm not quite as good as I thought I was. Not as bad as I am on my worst day. You get it, but I'm comfortable with who I am. And then I find myself again thinking, I thought that pride was dealt with. The point I'm making is this through this morning. I hope you're getting it. God is passionate about seeing injustice corrected in the world. And we as a church want to rally to every cause where we find injustice. We believe this matters. We can't divorce this from God dealing with our hearts. The two go hand in hand. If the band want to come back. The first picture I put up at the start was some white water rafting on the Zambezi. So friends of ours, we did that. Sarah and myself did that before we had kids. And it's absolutely wild, you know, and you get thrown out of the boat and you get sucked under. And I remember counting, they said, you've got massive life jackets on. And I remember them saying, just trust it. The life jackets will bring you up. You'll be okay. You know, you will come up. And because you don't, so you get thrown out of the raft. And then I remember started counting, one, two, and it's like being in a tumble dryer, you know what I mean? In a tumble dryer, washing machine, just round and round, no idea. Four, five, oh dear. And then like seven, eight, just under the water. And then eventually, like you pop up miles from where you were taken in. It did work. Anyway, my friend did this recently, he's in his 20s. So I was asking him about the Oblivion Rapid where we got thrown out and stuff, and he loved it and whatever. And I was thinking, I'm not sure I'd do that again now. I'm not sure I would. Just a little bit long in the tooth for that now. What I would do now, and you saw the news headlines earlier, I would plant a church again in this part of the city. I would follow him wherever he calls me to be. I don't believe that we have lost any of the adventure to say, Jesus, you can lead. You can lead. And we moved last year from St. Albans Road to Redhill Road, less than Mapley to Arnold. But we believe we're called to be change agents here in this city. But it starts here. And I'd want to say to all of you in the room that find this as home, the Lord has called you here. He's called us to make a difference together. And let's just allow him continue to lead and examine our hearts. Here's what we're going to do in a moment. So just have a listen. We're going to take communion in a while. So it's just going to sit on three tables at the back, and you can take that whenever you want this morning. And in taking communion, just for a moment, say thank you that you have given me the freedom. Thank you that you have paid the price for my forgiveness. But also, as you're walking there, just say, will you examine my heart again, Lord? I want to make a difference for you. And it starts here. And maybe thank God that he has placed you where you are to be a bringer of his kingdom.